The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York's Times Square. I'm Scott Wapner. Our traders on the desk are Pete Najarian, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, Tesla getting slammed after the SEC reportedly now looking into the shocking tweets from Elon Musk yesterday about taking his company private. Could Twitter be Tesla's downfall? We'll explain. Plus, it's a crypto crush. Bitcoin sinking after the SEC delayed its decision on another proposed ETF. Is this the final nail in Bitcoin's coffin, or will it rise from the dead? Dan Moorhead of Pantera Capital, a top crypto hedge fund manager, with us tonight. But first, we start with the group of stocks that just can't stay down. Tech making a Rocky-esque comeback. After a rough earnings season, as you know, it's the best performing sector of the past week. While FANG is leading the charge, names like Salesforce, NVIDIA, Cisco, and PayPal all joining in on the party. Guy?
Yes, sir.
Tech's back.
When did it leave?
Well, there was a bit of a lull.
It left in the form of maybe Facebook, if you want to jam that in there.
Netflix,
but, you know, you mentioned a couple
of NVIDIA.
Netflix.
I don't think Netflix is a tech stock,
but that's an entirely different conversation. You look at Salesforce. I mean, that's a stock at a valuation that trades in. That stock should have gotten obliterated. It did not. Adobe's another name. Huge valuation. Didn't really sell off that much. So the tech that we look at almost every day sort of hung in there.
But a lot of the glamour names.
Netflix, Tim mentioned.
And
NVIDIA,
a bit of an upset.
Yes.
Facebook.
I mean, Intel's had some issues. Facebook's its own animal. But I think tech in general has actually held in there pretty well. So I would push back and say, yeah, there have been some names that have had issues. But tech in general's done pretty well.
Jimmy Jamison, lead singer of Survivor. Scott, that's important because we did Eye of the Tiger on the way in.
Awful song.
And there, it might be one of the worst ever. But when I think about tech, I think there's been a little rotation. First of all, we've absolutely seen semis fall out of favor. And this was, you know, and I don't think that the semi story is over, but I think the high multiple, high momentum stocks are in a prove me period. And I think, say what you want, but this market has been led by transports. It's been led by industrials. And I would argue that banks
healthcare
have put in a good show.
Healthcare
for sure. So no,
discretionary.
I don't think you chase tech at all costs. I don't think you ever did, but valuations seem to matter a little more in this market than they did a month ago.
Karen?
I don't think the earnings have been pretty good. Apple was very good.
Great.
Amazon, very good. Alphabet, very good. Facebook and Netflix.
Microsoft?
Netflix, not as much. Microsoft, very good. So I don't know. I don't know why they sold off the little that they did. I don't think that should have happened. I still think even with them here, even with the market up very close to its all-time highs, there's value in some of these tech names.
Well, yeah. Google for sure.
Yes.
And there's plenty of places you can go still in tech if you're looking for value, but also there's an area where we kind of go here and there, but they have a little bit higher valuation, which makes them a little scarier. And I bring up something like Amazon, NVIDIA, some of these various names where you look at the valuation levels and you're like, wow, man, that's pretty expensive. But the growth is still there. And because the growth is still there, people are willing to look past the fact that many of these multiples are extremely high. But I agree. I mean, the sell-off in Facebook absolutely did pull down the market for a day or two. That ended.
Look,
and when you go through
Facebook's
the numbers,
if nothing else, it caused a somewhat deeper conversation on whether value was going to finally, you know, take the place of growth for a while. Now we're looking at these tech stocks, as we said. 1 week performance, Facebook 8%, Amazon 5%, Salesforce 5%, NVIDIA 5%, Cisco 5%, PayPal 4%. I mean, I could go on, but those are names I have in front of me indicative of how these stocks have come back.
To Pete's point, I think, you know, the Facebook absolutely rattled some chains, without question. But then you look at these stocks. I mean, you look at stocks, again, that should have gone down in a significant way, given the valuation, given the runs that they've had, and they really haven't done that much. I mean, you can make an argument that Microsoft at 28 times, maybe people look at it and say, that's an expensive stock. Maybe we should take profits. Really didn't happen. And again, Salesforce is another name at 60-time forward earnings. You had every opportunity to sell that stock off. That didn't happen. So Facebook notwithstanding, I don't think, again, my point originally is I don't think tech really ever left.
And it's a forward-looking market. When you're looking forward, you look at the forward PEs of a lot of these companies, right? And all of a sudden you look at Microsoft, it's not as expensive. I mean, you look at many of these various names and you look at the growth trajectory right now in many of these names. It's really there, Scott. I mean, there is actual growth, and those that are really focused on the cloud are crushing it right now. And because of that, I think you have to look. First of all, I never buy anything just because it's value or just because it's growth. Combine them both, that's the stock.
I think more impressive to the fact that we're knocking on the door of new highs is the move in healthcare in July. Got hit a little bit today. Discretionary, I think, closed at a new high today. Financials are carrying their weight for the first time in a while again. Those have to be viewed as more positive signs for not only getting to these new highs, but exceeding the
100%.
Highs.
We talked about healthcare the last couple weeks. We actually did a power pitch. That's something we do on the show. I know you host
it. It's called a fast pitch.
Fast money,
it.
Fast pitch.
Just let me in on a little secret. We've only done it for 2 years.
So we did the power pitch a couple weeks ago. We did
power
it on Pfizer
is,
drug.
You know, this
and we talked
program.
About right after the president went after Pfizer, we actually had a conversation on this desk that said, that's going to put in the low for Pfizer for quite some time. You have not seen a 3 or 4 week move in Pfizer drug like you've seen over the last couple weeks in the last 6 years. Something clearly is going on. Talk about value. I think big cap pharma is value. I think the bullseye was on their back. I think it's now off their back.
When I look at this market and I look at where we were in Jan 26 and then the move down and all the volatility in between and how the market is now kind of rallied, I think the outperformance of transports, which is probably about 7%, of banks, which is probably about 4%, of the discretionary, so whether it's not necessarily XRT, but individual names in that retail space that have been on fire. And most importantly, earnings, I think, gave credence to the argument that those cheap valuations were worth owning. Look at the rails. Look at what happened to the airlines. Look at what happened with the banks. I mean, this to me, this is the nice thing about earnings. You get fresh data points on companies that are giving you and reaffirming, and in some cases beating. That is important to the market.
Got some retailers coming up in the near term in their earnings as well. And as we said, discretionary is doing well. What are you watching most?
Well, just today in discretionary, Michael Kors, which is both a beverage and
a clothing company,
final trade last night. And those are good numbers, and that bodes well for a lot of others in the space. We saw Dillard's today with really excellent numbers. It's really interesting to me, though, that all of the different industries we're talking about, healthcare, which kudos to Guy, he's been on it for a long time, healthcare, banks, retail, transports, you know, a lot of times we hear the story of, oh, all the gains are coming from a very, very narrow sector of the market. It's just FANG. And that's not true anymore. So to
I don't know that it was ever true. I mean, I realize that the FANG names actually were a big percentage of the S&P. I fully get all that. But, I mean, the reality is outside of that, Microsoft was doing well. That's not in the FANG. I mean, there's a lot of names. Pfizer, you just mentioned.
Right,
I mean, healthcare.
If you went a little more broad outside of the FANG, you still had 6 or 7 stocks that
because
were accounting for like
90-some-odd
percent of the S&P's gains.
But the names outside of that were also performing. I mean, I think that's the part that gets lost a lot of people. I mean, a great example of that would be Merck and Pfizer and a lot of the different drug names that are out there. And there's been a real run, although it's pulled back recently, but in the biotech world.
What about the notion in that particular space of it has a more defensive posture? So the market has been a little more defensive lately. Morgan Stanley was out with a new note today talking about, you know, two of the three legs on the stool being knocked out of the market. Now wondering whether Apple's $1 trillion, you know, market cap thing was a potential sign of the top, that was the lights flashing and say, okay, market seems to be a little more defensive lately.
What are the two legs, Scott?
Apple hits. I don't remember exactly what.
Okay,
I'll pull up the note as you're talking.
Yeah,
I'll look at it.
The reason
one of them was the more defensive posture.
Well, look, I think Apple was actually doing nothing. I think Apple was actually, until they reported, if anything, it had been slightly defensive, but it really had been kind of a sideways move. And I think the earnings told you once again that there was a reason to reaffirm. It was sales. It was services. But I look at some of the other parts of the market that we wanted to see take hold. Banks, transports, and I repeat, I think this is where the strength in the market is coming from, because I think what Pete's saying is tech's going to continue to do what they do.
Right.
And therefore, if we get the broader support, that's what the S&P needs.
And with the 10-year now at 3%, or give or take, right there.
Which people are very comfortable
with. Look at the financials. Overall, they've had a very good month, and obviously started off with earnings, but you're talking about 6% for the XLF in the last month or so. That's pretty impressive.
To me, the biggest risk is market have. We're all thinking, oh, they'll work out trade. They'll work it out. Won't be a problem. Doesn't matter that the rhetoric keeps getting ratcheted up. That's the biggest risk, because if they don't work it out, there's a lot of downside, I think, to a lot of different industries. And I think there's some upside if they do work it out. But we're
Karen,
just assuming it's all going to be fine.
This morning,
I'm sort of making that assumption. But with the VIX here, I think it's good to own some puts in your portfolio.
I think that makes a ton of sense. This morning, though, we get an announcement that China slapped another $16 billion worth of $16 billion in tariff as a group, and the market yawned. I mean,
because they
barely
think work it out. I think you think everyone's just accepted these tariffs are really going to happen, and that's going to be the new way the world trade works.
Well,
I don't.
I'm not sure, and I would agree that ultimately the inflationary implications of a 10% tariff on the global economy is got a 10% hit on equity valuations. I don't think people are thinking about that, but I think people are looking at the reality, especially of consumer discretionary and banks and transports, and I don't think they're terribly concerned about tariffs once they've truly done their work. I think a lot of these sectors actually are more, more impervious and are going to be defensive in that environment.
All right, coming up, Tesla CEO Elon Musk reportedly under fire now from the SEC as it looks into his surprising tweets about the company yesterday. Could Twitter end up being the kryptonite for Mr. Musk? Plus, retail stocks staging a stealth rally ahead of their earnings reports next week. We're just talking about that. Guy Adami says there's one name he thinks could be the big winner there. We are live from Times Square in New York City tonight, and there is much more Fast Money after this.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. Saving, researching, investing. Now you can take those investments to the next level with Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today. I have an investment account with Schwab and a 401k with Fidelity, and I use Yahoo Finance to consolidate them so it's incredibly easy to manage. They've been helping great investors like you for over 25 years. So whether you're a seasoned investor or just looking to level up, Yahoo Finance can simplify things, putting all your tools and data in one spot. Yahoo Finance takes a 360-degree look at the financial news cycle, from breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, and customizable charts. They've got you covered. You can see all of your 401k and other investments by securely linking your brokerage accounts. Yahoo Finance gives you insights and helps you see your wealth in its entirety. That big picture perspective helps smart investors become even better. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor. YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com. That's YahooFinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. It is time for our earnings whip. Roku and Yelp both soaring after hours. Conference calls underway as we speak. Our Seema Modi is pulling double duty for us tonight. Let's get right to her for what is driving those moves and instant reaction from the street. Seema.
All right, Scott, let's start with Roku. Shares rallying on an upbeat earnings report and news that it's expanding access to free streaming entertainment, plus launching a Roku channel for the web. D.A. Davidson says World Cup in June likely contributed to Roku's strong performance. KeyBank says Roku is a very attractive asset given its growing engagement, purpose-built TV operating system, and data. Now, while some analysts say Roku is a good buyout target given the consolidation we're seeing in the media landscape, analysts say it still has plenty of room to grow on its own. Another stock on the move is Yelp. Earnings fueled by strength in advertising. Matthew Thornton of STRH says Yelp's results are a healthy beat and raise into cautious sentiment. He thinks the stock should rally, despite ongoing competition from OpenTable, which is owned by Booking Holdings. Shares of Yelp up 11% in extended trade. Scott?
Seema Modi, thank you so much. Seema back at headquarters covering the earnings reports. All right, let's take Yelp first. That's where Seema ended. What do we think?
Well, can I go Roku first? Because that's what I'm sorry. I apologize because I just looked at Roku.
You know what? Let's do Roku first.
No, and I'm sorry, Scott. I should have
Roku
anticipated your
Roku.
Yelp.
I
was
Roku?
Sort of doing an alphabetical
let's
order.
Do Roku
that's
first.
Just me.
Great idea.
You know, a lot of analysts raised their prices in July for Roku. I think three analysts raised their prices, all between sort of 50 and 54. After this quarter, they're going to probably have to raise their prices again. It's a ridiculous comment, I know. But you look at their EBIT margins were ridiculously strong, and their user growth continues to be much better than the street is expected. So if you think it's going to stop here, I don't think it will. There's a big short interest in the name, and I think the stock might have legs. And I think you're going to see people raise their numbers over the next couple of days.
Okay, who else on Roku?
Well, I'll tell you, Roku, what's interesting about this company, first of all, they're on 25% of the TVs that are coming out in 4K. Philips just did a deal with these guys. The digital advertising part of their business means that their metrics are better, their ARPUs are better, and this is a part of the company I think a lot of people don't really understand. So companies just had a massive move, though. I mean, this is a $30 stock 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago. So I don't think you need to touch it here, even though those are great numbers, and it's going to see upgrades.
You okay? Can we go to Yelp now? Or
I think we should go to Yelp now. Maybe Peter Karen have a view
okay?
on Yelp.
It's okay.
I actually wanted to talk about Roku.
See?
All right, go ahead.
No, I just think it's interesting. I mean, clearly, the cord-cutting angle, right? It's huge. This stock, I think, I don't know, do you need to own it if you do find in your portfolio that you have cord-cutting exposure elsewhere? Kind of interesting. The metrics on it, you know, it's certainly not a
value stock.
The
growth metrics are pretty phenomenal,
though,
right?
The growth metrics, exactly.
And the user growth.
The top line growth are phenomenal. That short interest, as Guy mentioned, at over 22%, that's kind of interesting as well. I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued by it. Not that I'd buy it right here up so much after earnings, but, you know, this is one I should look at harder because there's something here for sure that even up here, that kind of growth is surprising to me. They can keep going.
Right.
Probably time to talk about Yelp.
No, I can get a hint. I can take a hint. Moving on. Coming up next. No, sorry. Yelp.
Could we?
Yelp. Can we? Please? Is it okay now?
Look, I think the expectations into these numbers were incredibly low. I think the no-term advertising, the no-term commitment of the underlying users and is not something that changes the game for these guys. The valuation at 20 times is cheap for a reason. I wouldn't chase this number.
I'm not so sure about that. I actually think when they beat and they're raising, I think at a 20 times earnings, I think it's very inexpensive. I would never have guessed that Yelp had that kind of an earnings level in terms of PE that we talk about all the time. I would never have thought it was that low. Actually, I think with the growth they got going forward, this stock actually could continue until it gets somewhere towards about a 25 multiple.
Okay. Anybody else on Yelp?
You know, we play a game on this. You ever play
Would You
that,
Rather?
That, Would You Rather? You
want to we don't have to play it anymore. We just did.
Well, Would You Rather?
You already did. You'd rather eat Roku.
I'd rather Roku. Yeah, I would. So we play the game before we play the game.
How about the game of what would you rather talk about?
Roku.
All right, coming up.
Taste of Yelp.
Coming up. Some of the biggest retail stocks on deck for earnings next week, and there's one name Guy Adami says is about to break out. It's not Roku or Yelp. He'll give us his fast pitch. In the meantime, here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Yeah, that's what Bitcoin hodlers were doing today. But a top crypto hedge fund manager says, hodl on, dudes. Better days are ahead. Plus, regulators reportedly cracking down on Musk and his crazy tweets. Will it finally catch up to the stock? We'll bring you the latest when Fast Money returns.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We have a developing story on Tesla, that stock falling on reports the SEC may now be looking into Elon Musk's tweets about taking the company private. Let's go to our Leslie Picker back at headquarters following this story. Leslie.
Hey, Scott. Musk's tweet from yesterday about taking Tesla private has now reportedly attracted regulatory attention. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Securities and Exchange Commission has reached out to Tesla and asked whether Musk's plan to take the company private is factual. The journal's story, citing people familiar with the matter, sent Tesla's shares lower in late afternoon trading. Tesla closed down 2.4% today, pairing a little bit of yesterday's 11% gain. The tweet in focus is the one where Musk said, quote, "am considering taking Tesla private at 420, funding secured." That was followed by several more tweets and a memo where he described his plans in more detail. The journal's story said that the SEC also inquired about why the disclosure was first made on Twitter rather than a regulatory filing. The story also said it wasn't immediately clear whether the SEC has opened a formal enforcement investigation. The SEC declined to comment to CNBC. But former SEC Chairman Harvey Pitts was on Squawk Box this morning and said there was enough for regulators to start asking questions. The former president of the NYSE, Tom Farley, recently tweeted to the SEC urging the regulator to ask Tesla for their signed agreements from funding sources by 5 p.m. Eastern time that would demonstrate that the funding is, quote, secured and certain in order to inspire market confidence. Tesla's independent directors put out a statement this morning saying that Musk initiated a discussion with the board about taking the company private. They added that the board has met several times since then and said they are taking the appropriate next steps to evaluate a potential deal, Scott.
Leslie, thank you very much. Leslie Picker. All right. Yeah. Let's trade this. This is not a big shock compared considering what we discussed one night ago.
Not a big shock that he's under potential.
No, we knew. I mean, you had to figure the SEC was going to look into.
Of course. It's absurd. The idea that he hasn't filed any kind of 13D amendment, it's ridiculous. Also, there's going to be shareholder litigation that, you know, the company knew this was happening, never disclosed it to shareholders. All that is noise, though. I think even if they end up paying fines, whatever, it's all noise. The question is there really a deal to be had? Is there really financing and or equity, debt or equity or both, to get this deal done? I'm shocked at the level or the lack of disclosure. That letter to the employees was, okay, that's nice, but a tweet like that, it's absurd that there is not anything more. I'm shocked they didn't file anything today as a 13D amendment. He should have filed it really yesterday, but I don't know. Who is their counsel that's saying, we're good this way? This is the way to do it.
The board put out the statement today, right? Apparently, this idea came up more than a week ago.
Well, who's the board, too? I mean, that's a board that I think is a very, very affiliated
yes.
board. Let's be clear. So, I mean, right. where were they? And by the way, where was this statement, you know, until today? I mean, the whole thing, it's the protocols don't really make a lot of sense. This is a guy who's been so outspoken against shorts. This is a guy who takes particular glee in being out there. By the way, I don't know why one would take it so personally. This guy should be laughing both all the way to the bank and all the way to the ultimate throne of innovation. I mean, there's no question that this guy is considered a hero and that this company is very well respected. Why not just leave it alone? By the way, 420. A lot of people were wondering. We've accounted segments tonight on this show.
Ridiculous.
A lot of people thought that the 420 number was.
I think for you to say where was the board, though. I mean, this is a guy who has always operated outside of the board. He's a guy who just does what he wants to do when he wants to do it, and he's got the stack board. He's got a family member on the board. I mean, if you look at all of that. That part doesn't surprise me at all, Scott. The fact that Harvey Pitt was talking about they're going to look into it, of course they're going to look into this. I think they have to. But the idea that he can't find strategic partners or maybe has found strategic partners out there, sovereign wealth, whatever it might be, maybe there are discussions with companies here in the United States.
I know this sounds crazy, but what happens if next week, you know what, I decided not to do it? Then what happens? You mentioned the shareholder. You mentioned the possibility of shareholder lawsuits.
The stock will be
lawsuits.
A 280.
Right.
The stock will be a 280.
Yeah, what about all the people who bought it before it was halted?
I agree. I mean, it's dangerous.
Them?
And, again, the charge is that it could be manipulative.
The other
but
point
here's
is,
the thing, though, that he has going for him. I highly doubt he's trading on this. Highly
absolutely
doubt.
Absolutely not.
No
I mean,
way, right? So he's certainly not
really
manipulating
dumb. Be dumber than the tweet.
Himself, right? That maybe gives him some cover. Even if he were to say we're working towards a deal, that doesn't make him bound to have to do a deal. But this kind of disclosure, it's so cryptic.
I mean, if he would have simply said, just to throw this out there, thinking about taking Tesla private, we wouldn't be having this conversation the way we are. Others have talked about the possibility of taking companies private, you know, all the time. I probably asked Carl Icahn about whether he would take Herbalife. Try and take Herbalife private at one point. But this goes a little
funding
further. Financing secured. Or funding
That's
secured.
Funding secured that tells you that there's been definite conversations
right.
and that there have been formal conversations.
And board, if any of you watch this show, someone has approached your company to make a bid for it to take it private. It happens to be your CEO. Obviously, you know all that. You have a duty to your shareholders to tell them what the hell's going on.
Yeah. All right. Options traders are betting that despite all the drama, Tesla has more room to run. Let's go to Mike Coe out in San Francisco with that angle. Mike.
Yeah, so Tesla traded more than 2 times its average daily options volume, and this is one of the stocks that trades a lot of volume to begin with. That made it the busiest single stock option by a long shot, well over Apple, which was the second place in terms of how much activity we saw. And most of that activity by the end of the day was concentrated in the weekly 380 calls. We saw over 11,000 of those trading for about $5.50. So those are options traders making a bet that the stock will be above 385.50 by the end of the week. And I would make one other quick point here, too, which is that, and Pete can speak to this, when you think there's going to be a deal, very frequently, if there's going to be a takeout, the longer dated option premiums will drop because the volatility of a stock that's private is zero. And we did actually see 3-month and extended volatility drop a little bit here. So the options market is suggesting that there is some chance that Elon Musk is going to do something here.
I was going to go to Guy, but Co said go to you. Go. What do you got?
Well, Mike points out something very important, because the fact that that shows you that there is some belief in the idea that maybe there is something to this, something to that tweet, because if you see that volatility absolutely collapse in the distance, that's because you're buying time. You're buying time when you're going 3 months out, 4 months out, and it's very expensive. You already have volatile options. Now you're paying for the time on those volatile options. It's going to cost you a lot of money if you're going to be out there, and it's nice to see that come back in. That says a lot about what people's perception is of what might happen with Tesla.
Although, I mean, would the stock be at 370 today and down by 2.5% if the market really thought this was a high likelihood of happening?
Where was it before the tweet?
Yeah, well, there was the Saudi thing that came out just a little bit before. What was it? I don't know.
Which was fairly small. $2 billion.
That?
Yep.
All right. I'm just saying, if you thought it was a high likelihood, wouldn't the stock be up again today?
It didn't trade particularly well today.
Yeah, it didn't trade particularly well today.
And the trader hat in me says, you know what, we traded up to levels we last saw June 2000 and I think 16 or 17, I forget. Seemingly it failed. Now you have a potential for a double top. But I push it back and say, this is my opinion. I think the Saudi investment fund is to Tesla. I said this last night. The way the Fed is to the S&P 500. I'm telling you, I believe there's now a floor in this
name. Well, I mean, again.
Thank you.
I need to say what I said. I just think sovereign wealth funds, that's yesterday's news. It doesn't tell me what they're doing tomorrow. And, of course, they've made an investment in an EV company. I mean, it's Saudi Arabia. I don't know. 350 is where the stock was before any of this news came out.
So it's not that $20.
Big deal.
All right. Thanks to Mike Coe. By the way, more options action. You can check out the full show Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. Guess who's here for that?
You would be. It's a great time.
That's right.
You're going to watch that.
All right. Still ahead. Retail stocks have been on fire. And Guy Adami, who else? Who else says the rally could get even hotter when one name in the space reports earnings next week? He'll give us his fast pitch. Plus, that's the way the crypto crumbles. The space getting crushed today. The SEC postponing its decision for a Bitcoin ETF. One crypto hedge fund manager, though, says a sell-off is the perfect buying opportunity. He'll tell us when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin bulls just had their hopes for a Bitcoin ETF dashed again by the SEC. And with the cryptocurrency now dropping close to 6,000, could this be the nail in the coffin for Bitcoin? Bob Pisani's breaking it down from the New York Stock Exchange. Bob.
Hello there, Scotty. Another painful day for Bitcoin, dropping 10% or nearly $10 billion in the last 24 hours. Ouch again. The problem here is we're no closer to a Bitcoin ETF, despite a novel approach to getting around the issue that bothers the SEC. Overnight, the SEC said they were delaying a decision on the SolidX Bitcoin ETF, which is sponsored by SolidX Management with marketing assistance from VanEck Securities. Now, a decision was been put off until September 30th, but don't kid yourself. The SEC is likely not considering anything other than a lengthy brief on why they will deny the ETF at that time, just as they denied the Winklevoss Bitcoin ETF last month. The reason they are likely to deny it, it just doesn't fully address the issues that worry the SEC about Bitcoin. They denied the Winklevoss application on the grounds that most Bitcoin trading occurs outside the United States on unregulated exchanges that are subject to fraud and manipulation. That's a big barrier to overcome. Now, to its credit, the VanEck application tries to address these issues by putting a hefty $200,000 price tag on the initial entry to join the club, thus scaring away a lot of retail investors. And they also add a layer of insurance to protect investors in the event that the coins are hacked or stolen. But this is not likely to satisfy the SEC. Now, does it really matter if we get a Bitcoin ETF or not? I think it really does matter. I think it matters a lot. This whole summer rally, just take a look in Bitcoin, going from 6,300 to 8,300 in a couple weeks. That was the middle of July. That was largely based on speculation that a Bitcoin ETF might be approved. No surprise, the recent top in Bitcoin was July 25th. That was the day before the SEC denied the Winklevoss application, and it's been down 8 of the last 10 trading days. And look at it, it's right back to where it was before all this speculation started. And Scott, the reason I think this is worrisome is that obviously Bitcoin doesn't have a lot of internal energy on its own, and it's depending upon new buyers coming in to move the price up. And that was the big hope behind the ETF that is, I still think, very doubtful right now. Back to you.
Yep, Bob, thanks so much. Bob Pisani down at the Stock Exchange. For more, let's bring in Dan Moorhead. He's the CEO of Pantera Capital, one of the world's largest crypto hedge funds. And despite the plunge, he is still betting on Bitcoin. Dan's with us, as you can see, from San Francisco. Dan, welcome. It's good to have you on Fast Tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
I'm sure you heard Pisani's report just now. What do you think of the correlation between the ETF trouble and this decline in Bitcoin that we've seen?
Oh, I think the main thing to remember is that Bitcoin's like very early stage venture, but it has a real-time price feed. And that's a unique thing, and people get really excited about the price and overreact, I think, to announcements. There's been a couple of big things coming out in the last week, and the ETF rejection is the same story we've had for, you know, 5 years. I think the SEC's been very cautious with an ETF.
Right. Well, how much do you think an ETF actually matters to the success of Bitcoin, or at the very least, to help right this, what seemingly is a listing ship?
Oh, yeah, it's all perspective, right? Bitcoin's up 82% year on year, so it's still doing very, very well. And the perspective one should have is, given that Bitcoin is such early stage venture type security or asset, it needs to be done as hedge funds first. And Pantera launched the first cryptocurrency product in the U.S. 5 years ago. We looked at ETFs, we looked at a lot of different products, and we picked hedge fund structure. I still think that's the best way to go, and I think it's going to be quite a long time until an ETF is approved. And here's the perspective. The last asset class to get approved for ETF certification was copper. And copper's been on Earth for 10,000 years, and it just got approved in 2012 after a very long multi-year process. I think ETFs in Bitcoin still have quite a ways to go.
Hey, Dan, it's Tim Seymour. Welcome back. So what does get you excited then? What's the next catalyst here? And why should it just be about an ETF? Because you've been doing this a long time. You weren't doing it for the ETF.
Yeah, so that's what I love about markets is news comes out and some people take things really positively and make a big deal out of them and some people don't. In the last three or four business days, we've had two pieces of news. The ETF being rejected for the fifth time, that doesn't seem like it's very interesting to me. But on Friday, the parent company, the New York Stock Exchange, which also owns $42 billion worth of other exchanges, launched a cryptocurrency exchange called Bakkt. That is huge news. The other investors, including Pantera or BCG, Microsoft, that is going to be a very profound impact over the next 5 or 10 years for the markets. And to my mind, that's what people should be focused on.
Karen?
And it's Karen. There's been a few people who've said 6,000, it's sort of the cost to mine, and that should be some sort of floor. I never quite really fully bought that, but if enough people think 6,000 is the floor, well, then it's the floor. What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to ever do those kind of real-world mining, cost of mining kind of calculations. All these are sunk costs. People built these enormous big data centers of computer chips that are doing the mining. So I think it's unlikely to have any kind of fixed support there. Company might run at a loss for 6 months, hoping that the price is coming back. So I think there really isn't a level like in copper where you get below the marginal cost of production, people just stop their mines. Here, I think there isn't some kind of fixed floor like that. And again, Bitcoin was half this price a year ago when it was all working great. So the price could go down, but I really do think a year from now it'll be much, much higher than it is today.
Pete, last word to you.
Well, I think right now it's so difficult just to determine, you know, where to be, how to be, you know, and the volumes. When we've seen the volumes come back, Scott, that's actually moved Bitcoin. But that's been one of the things. AMD is the way I've been playing this so far.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. Our thanks to Dan Moorhead again out in San Francisco. We'll see you again soon. I'm sure we will. Can't get enough crypto? Well, we got you covered. You can go to CNBC.com right now for all the latest Bitcoin headlines and the price action. There's the article that's up there as we speak. Still ahead, Guy Adami has strutted his way over to the plasma.
What's he wearing?
I don't know what that is.
That's uncomfortable.
He is getting ready to pitch the one retail stock he says is looking good into earnings. The name and more, Guy Adami. Is that a good thing? When Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Looks like retail is back in fashion. Names like Tiffany and Macy's, Dillard's, Kohl's, TJ Maxx, all on a rallying over the past 3 months, surging 20% or more. TJ Maxx hitting an all-time high today, in fact. As earnings kick off next week, what do? We keep on betting on retail? Gang, what do we think?
Well, I tell you what, I think if you think of some of the names you just mentioned, they were favorites a couple years ago at the expense of everybody else. What we've seen over the last, say, couple months, and really even since Black Friday, is that the discretionary names that were left for dead have proven that not only are they running their businesses better, but that the valuations got so cheap that they actually were interesting. And I think you stay in a lot of those names.
I agree. The valuations got really, really cheap, overdone for sure, even though they've rallied a lot. Remember, the whole market's rallied, so the valuations relative to the rest of the market is still attractive. And, if you know, something like Kohl's today, that's probably good for Macy's, probably good for where they do wholesale. I like it. Staying long.
Okay. Guy?
Well, I got a power pitch coming on.
Yes, I do.
You saw it before.
I'm almost afraid to see what's coming.
Do you want me to walk over there
Go
now?
Go ahead, please.
I mean, should I sashay?
Guy, I have a request.
Please.
Could this be a fast pitch? Look at that.
The fast pitch. And now look.
They're walking uphill.
Why is he getting
I have to walk.
What's this?
See the walk? No, because they want me to
Right,
Paul Newman.
Right said
Guy. But look, this is going to be crazy. And I know people would be like, you're out of your mind. How are you going to pitch a retail? But you know what? I'm going to pitch Nordstrom's. And why is that? Last quarter, the stock got obliterated on earnings. But if you look closely, it really wasn't an earnings thing. It was a comps thing. The comps were miserable, but they beat on the top line and they beat on the bottom line. Valuation, all right, 14 times forward earnings. You could say it's expensive, but it's not ridiculous when you look at the rest of the space. 12% short interest. We've seen what happened to big short interest stock over the last 6 months. I would suggest 12% is significant. And the last one, improving margins. And how do I get there? I'll tell you how. Last quarter, inventories were down 1.9%, down 1.9%, and you had sales growth of 5.8%. Suggests to me that you're going to see a much better margin number this quarter. With everything shaping up, if you look, the stock came back from last quarter. It's bumping up against these levels that we've last seen over the last 6 months. I think, like some of these retail names, it sets up for a breakout to the upside. And I'll mention this. Dana Telsey, who is the axe in the space, they just raised their price target in the name. So I think Nordstrom's has a real chance here to surprise people on the upside.
All right. How about questions for Guy? Who has one?
I got a quick one for you, Guy.
Petey.
So here's my question for you. TJX, Scott was just talking about the fact that it hit 52-week highs today, right? Or all-time highs. Is this something you'd ever compare to a Nordstrom's because of the fact that they've got the discount, they've got Nordstrom Rack, and that's where they're seeing so much growth right now?
Yeah, and you make a great point. I'll tell you right now. Sales growth, digital sales last quarter were 29%. Digital growth the same quarter the prior year was 25%. So you're starting to see them do much better digitally. You've talked about it as well, Pete. The Nordstrom stories has changed. Now, look, they had their investor day a month ago, and it didn't overwhelm people. But the stock is held in there. So I think the setup is such that it could surprise, and that's why I'm saying Nordstrom's is my power pitch. Yes, Tim.
Yeah, quick question. Was that blue steel? And in fact, with the tie, the wrap around the head, and if so, do you think you have more blue steel than Derek Zoolander?
I mean, that's the easiest question you've ever asked me. I mean, first of all, Blue Steel, the movie with Jamie Lee Curtis, must watch. Talked about commodities trading number one. Blue Steel with the, who'd you guy that mentioned, Sandler or Stiller?
Yeah.
They asked me to do it. I turned it down.
Come
they
on,
gave it
ben
to him.
Stiller.
But my Stiller was much better
Derek
than his Stiller.
Zoolander. Blue Steel.
Vote.
All right. What are we doing on the fast pitch?
Which way are we
Karen,
going?
Karen, let's go
Start
you
with
first.
Karen.
I'm really not an artist. The other guys are. But I'm buying with Guy. I like it. Love the sachet, too.
After you put your fingernails on the chalkboard again, can you reveal? I mean, what was that?
I don't know why we were given chalkboards, and I was given a marker to write it up, but that's a... Yes, I'm a buyer. I actually think JWM massively has lagged the department stores.
Like, Nice job.
I think it is all about the rack, and I think Guy points that out. When you're competing with TJ Maxx, Burlington, and all the rest of them, Ross, they're doing a great job over there with Nordstrom's. Giddy up.
It's a lot of words on there. I appreciate that.
I wanted to make
sure it's hard to read, but,
14 PE, the whole thing. Yeah, I like
cool.
it.
Cool. Thanks.
Wow.
Nice pitch, Guy. Thank you, Petey.
Buys all the way around.
Yep. Giddy up.
Tony,
what about you? Did it make you want to buy the stock? You can vote in our Twitter poll, CNBC Fast Money. We're going to reveal the results later on in the show. Plus, the California wildfires are blazing across that state. Could disrupt a growing industry as well. Pot. We've got those details coming up live at the NASDAQ, right in the heart of New York City. More Fast in 2 minutes. Welcome back to Fast Money. The raging wildfire in California, now the largest in the state history, still growing as well. So what could it mean for the cannabis industry? Our Aditi Roy live in Ukiah, California, with that developing story. Aditi?
Hi there. That's right. Firefighters here at the command center for the Mendocino Complex fire are desperate to get ahead of these flames. Right now, more than 23,000 people have been evacuated. Among them are some cannabis growers. The Mendocino Complex fire is now raging across more than 300,000 acres. Mendocino is one of the three counties affected by this particular blaze, and it's also part of the so-called Emerald Triangle, the pot-growing capital of California. Cannabis farmers are used to the threat of wildfires. Last year, some of the state's cannabis crop was destroyed during the wine country fires. We met up that last year with a Sonoma County cannabis farmer who lost all of his crop, and also a cannabis company called Cannacraft, which also lost a lot of inventory during the Northern California wildfires. It happened right before the harvest. It's virtually impossible to track how many cannabis growers are affected by the current fire, given that not all of them are licensed. Even a lot of the licensed ones are hesitant to come forward. But industry insiders I've talked to say because the fire is traveling eastward, where you don't see as many marijuana crops, it seems that these fires won't have a mass effect on the statewide supply of legal weed. For those of growers who may have lost crops, they face an additional challenge. A lot of them don't have insurance, and because of that, when their crops do burn down, they face the additional threat of going out of business altogether. Back to you guys.
Aditi, thank you so much for the very latest there. For more on this, let's bring in a man who was born to work in this industry, Smoke Wallen, with Vertical Companies, a major pot player in California. It's good to have you on. Your reaction, first and foremost, when you see the kind of pictures that Aditi was showing us and the story that she's telling.
Tragic. I mean, those fires are awful for everyone involved. And our thoughts go out to all the people that are in that area. It doesn't affect us very much. We have a massive indoor operation, and our operations are out in Santa Barbara County. And it may affect the price of flour, potentially. But you do the best you can to mitigate this kind of situation. But I came from the wine and spirits industry, and there's been wine grown in California for a long time, and they seem to work their way through it.
You want to just remind people who don't know exactly what your business does as it relates to marijuana?
Absolutely. So Vertical is a seed-to-sale, seed-to-shelf company. We cultivate, extract, manufacture edibles, vapes, all the different product categories, beverages, and have full distribution and sales. We're one of the largest scale operators in the country. And we're mainly California, but we have operations in several other states as well.
And you're looking to go public at some point, correct?
At some point down the road. Right now, we're building our business, and we're focused on executing our plan, and we're operators, and not there's other guys out there that are kind of buying up assets and are kind of more portfolio plays. We're an execution company. We're focused on building a scale business. I mean, this is the biggest growth opportunity of any category I can remember in my lifetime. And I'll go back to Prohibition and the repeal of the alcohol prohibition that happened in 1933. I mean, this is an industry that could be as big as the current alcohol business, which in the U.S. is $260 billion at retail sales.
Right, and so, Smoke, that's what's fascinating here, because I think we tend to focus on production, and this is an awful fire story in terms of production, but to me, this is a consumer product story. And CPG as a sector and as a way to focus investments for investors. I mean, what's happening? Who's carving out brands? Because I think brands matter in cannabis. And I actually think that people underestimate the impact in the same way that the alcohol and beverage companies are doing this, the way the cannabis companies are.
You're exactly right. And that's how we think about it. Brands are the key to everything. And we have large scale production so that we can fulfill the needs of our brands. You can't make a brand unless you can fulfill it and you can deliver the same brand experience each time for a consumer, right? So we're building all that back in infrastructure so that we can build brands. We have about 25 brands, some of which are ours, some of which are partner brands that we're at different stages of launching in the California market. And, you know, let's face it, brands are built in, you know, a couple places, the coast, you know, California, Southern California is as good a place as you could imagine to build brands. And then we'll take those brands, the recipes, the packaging, and license them and put them out in all the other markets that are available, which we're up to 30 states that now have some form of legal cannabis.
Smoke, a few weeks ago, we saw a big raise for a company. I think it's called Acreage, gave them a certain valuation. Why do you think that your story is more interesting at this point?
Well, I think those guys are doing a nice job, and I'm not going to say anything bad about them, but I think ours, again, is an execution play. In 13 states, those guys hit a certain number next year, and we're of similar scale, but we can hit it all in California. So it's really about a scale operation. And look, the capital is starting to, it's chasing this, right? You see the valuations in the Canadian market. That's because there's limited options for people to invest in this market and in the U.S. market, which is arguably going to be a $100 billion plus market, you know, in a few years' time. So we're seeing new capital inflows into the space. And, those guys my hat's off to Kevin and the team for raising that kind of capital. And, you know, they paved the way for us. So we're doing similar things.
Appreciate you being here.
Yep. Thanks for having us.
All right. I spoke Wallen. Let's trade it. Timmy?
Well, I'll tell you what. None of the cannabis names that trade in Canada are cheap. And so when we talk about this sector, one, we want to give people some sense that you should be buying global production stories and the guys that have a first mover advantage. But this is a biopharma story. We've obviously seen this with Epibiodex, and we've seen this with some of the other names that have been carved out. We're getting FDA approval. So that's what I would encourage investors to do. Put a basket together. Get yourself exposure to the entire sector because, frankly, I think the valuations aren't what's interesting. I think it's the prospect of the opportunity.
All right. Anybody else?
Well, quickly, you saw Constellation Brands just made an investment in the space. You saw Molson Coors over the last couple of weeks. And if you don't think big cap pharma is going to get into it soon, you're mistaken. So Tim mentioned it. This disrupts a number of different industries. And whether you like it or not, it's coming. And I think the federal, which a lot of people thought were a couple years away, it's probably closer to 12 months away.
And I think those are the best ways to play it, is to get it on the periphery. And if you get something like a Scotts Miracle-Gro or you get something in Constellation, you're getting a piece of that, but you've also got solid businesses that you know right now are going to be the backbone of what you're investing in, Scott. But then you've got the kicker on the outside of that with the cannabis side.
All right, we'll step away other side. We'll come back. We'll do final trades. Okay, forget about the vote on guys' pitch for Nordstrom. That was a loser.
Whoa.
Hey. Loser.
And you said it with such glee.
Yeah, he came right at
no,
you.
Sorry.
Don't worry.
We'll vote on this, though. Who does a better blue steel, Ben Stiller or Guy Adami?
Me. Look at that.
Exactly.
Scott, what do you say? Come on,
that's
Scott.
Pretty similar.
Or the other one that he mentioned. Right? I mean, he was just throwing out a bunch of different actors. Okay, time for the final trade. We'll go around the horn. Pete.
I own stock. I own calls. I actually believe in this big time, obviously. Celgene. It's going higher. Giddy up.
Timmy.
I tell you what, you know, Ben Stiller's got someone chasing him down. It might be Guy Adami.
Could be Adam Sandler. Right? I mean, he was the other star.
Alibaba. That's been chased down. I think there's a lot of value there. Baba.
Yeah.
Darren?
Some retail's cheap space still. Foot Locker.
Okay. Guy?
Giddy up on that, Nordstrom's. I don't care what the Twitter poll says.
All right. Good stuff. Guys, thank you. Thanks for watching. Mad Money with Kramer begins now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.